Continuing on now with another controversial issue in our news. In the last week, a part of a bill concerning criminal investigations of prostitution has filled the local and national dialogue. Why? Well, the idea that a current exemption in Hawaii law meant that law enforcement officers were having sex with prostitutes as part of their investigations. HPD said despite the law, it had internal policies in place, though they declined to tell us exactly what they were. They said they needed the exemption, and then yesterday they said they didn't. We called criminal attorney Brooke Hart to see what he makes of all this, and he joins us now by phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth.
Thank you for being here. Good to talk to you again.
Very good to talk to you.
Well, when we talked to Teresa Bell over at HPD, the communication media liaison, she sent us back a note that had a line in it that was repeated in many different reports, saying that recent news reports claim that the Honolulu Police Department urged lawmakers to keep an exemption in state law that allows undercover officers to engage in sex with prostitutes. This statement is misleading and inaccurate. Was it?
Was it misleading? Well, unless you know the background, some people could see it as misleading. What's important to know are these facts. First of all, the undercover work by police officers, in my lengthy experience, has included going beyond mere words, and sometimes involves something close to, if not actual, penetration. I've had cases where the matter got to a point where the condom was on and the individual's body part was just about in, and sometimes in. Now, in the last few years, the police have moved more towards a words-only basis for arrests and testimony. This puts a premium on who can tell the story best and who can report what was actually said accurately. Now, if the police used tape recorders or some kind of a recording device and actually had the words so that you could capture for court an actual offer to agree or an agreement to engage in sexual contact in return for a fee, things would be a lot easier. But the notion that police should have a free rein to do more is really quite disturbing.
But the idea that this was in fact going on was not untrue.
Well, it does. Several criminal defense lawyers testified to that. In my own experience, it has gone on. Here's the problem. While the police claim that they have internal rules that prohibit it, and they probably do, they won't share them with the community.
And they certainly didn't share them with us.
They didn't share them with you or with anybody else. And the police have, on the other side, a rule that does not permit the public to know what it is that officers did who were disciplined, except if they were discharged or suspended for more than a year. So there's no way to get at the notion that there are these rules in place and what they are and how frequently police take advantage of them. After all, most police officers are honest, but in this particular area of enforcement, I have seen, shall we say, more parsimony with the truth than in almost any other area except perhaps narcotics.
You're really talking about potentials for abuses of power.
That is correct.
As we looked at, excuse me, some of what we were told, too, it seems to be that this idea of the verbal offer, being able to respond to that, sorry for that, being able to respond to a verbal officer from a suspected prostitute was at the heart of why HPD said they needed to maintain this exemption, which seemed a little bit illogical given the exemption allows them to go as far as you've just talked about. Was this a smokescreen?
I don't know what a smokescreen is, but I do know what the practice is on the street, and most cases these days are being made with words only, which leads to a particularly pernicious or potentially pernicious situation, the change in the law that permits extreme punishment for those who offer or agree to engage in sexual activity in return for a fee with a minor, and I'm not sure whether the 2 years age difference clause is going to survive, but just imagine this, you know, a, a not very worldly college student from Hilo comes to UH, and one night he and his friends go down to Waikiki, and out are the undercover police officers, women, who maybe are 21 or 22 or 23, but can pose and look like they're 16 or 17, and they tell the college student, well, you know, I'm really under 18, and the college student says, well, you don't look it. In any event, let's go over here in the shadows, and I'll give you $100 if you do so-and-so. That young person, who is otherwise not criminal and would never knowingly or intentionally have sexual contact with somebody who's under 16, but for purposes of this law, it's under 18, taken into the situation, violates the law, and then the consequences are enormous. It's a felony. It's a felony for life because it can't be deferred, and you go on the sex offender registry. That, to me, is not a fair balance.
Not for a kid who may be very naive and really be exposed to some of this for the first time, as you've just talked about. That also brings up another issue of who goes undercover. Are these people from HPD, or are they officers brought in from elsewhere? Because there seems to be this idea floating around that because we're a small place and people know people and have gone to school with each other, that the undercover cops have to be imported.
In my experience, they aren't imported, but there is a state Supreme Court decision which permits the police to use a civilian agent to gather the evidence and therefore often go further in the sexual activity than their internal rules might permit. And the Supreme Court in State v. Tooks upheld that behavior. I think probably importing officers is too expensive to do on a widespread scale.
Just to bring this to a close, because we have to say goodbye in a moment, HB 1926 is still very much alive, will be heard again on Friday, tomorrow. You express concern about the clause regarding minors. That seems to be where you're really hanging your hat on this one.
Well, it's one of the numerous concerns that I have about the bill. The bill takes from a procedure that we've used for more than 45 years, the deferral process for first offenders, and applies it to many, many cases that previously a deferral was possible, a deferral that allows a person to resurrect their life, to avoid the stigma of a felony conviction, and to go on to learn from their experience. In my long history as a criminal defense lawyer, in this particular area specifically, most people are not criminals. They're people who, on the moment, or maybe under the influence of alcohol or some other stimulant, decide to do something that's put in front of them by an attractive-looking undercover officer, and they've lost their judgment for a few moments. These are not cases that should result in sex offender registration, except for those who are actually looking for minors and attempting to make some contact that's clearly illegal. They're not people who prey on minors so much as they're just mistaken, and just being mistaken would not be a good basis on which to label a person for life.
And have their stupidity follow them forever.
Well, not just the stupidity, but the enormous cost. Getting a job when you have a felony conviction, and more so when you're on the sex offender registry, is all but impossible. And the collateral costs of this kind of legislation, we haven't even begun to think of.
All right, we have to leave it there for the moment. But Brooke Hart, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We'll talk to you again. Brooke Hart is a well-known Honolulu criminal defense attorney. He also teaches at the Richardson School of Law at the University of Hawaii Manoa in the Hawaii Innocence Project.